I'm Gonzalo Basigalupe. I'm a researcher right now in the Basque Country, although I hold an appointment also in the at UMass Boston. So my interest, and I'm going to try to be brief and just to share with you a project in which we've been working for about a year in trying to understand what will be the potential for social media projects to impact the ability of physicians, mental health practitioners, researchers, patients to collaborate. That's the question. And so I'll share with you where we are with the project and where we're going with it. And I'd be glad to send you the PowerPoint if you email me there. It's easy to find me, actually. So there's no relationships to disclose, and this is important here. I would have said it anyway because I'm presenting a lot of products here. So basically what I wanted to do, and the project wanted to do, is to identify some categories that allow us to evaluate the social media tools. There's a lot of statements about a lot of social media, like for instance, you're all probably familiar with Text for Baby, which is one of the most common mobile health products that exist. And they've been touting that this is very effective, but only very recently they actually began to evaluate it. It doesn't mean that it's not, it's just that there's a lot of statements about what works, but that do not necessarily tell us that they actually work. There's no evidence. So I wanted to figure out how to develop a taxonomy of variables that will allow us to evaluate this. These are the questions, and I'll basically trying to map what is out there, trying to develop a model to think about these, what would be the variables that inform collaboration when we're thinking about social media. Most of you are probably very familiar with this. This is coming out of a report by Deloitte, just came out, and it deals with the issue of the different kinds of social network. How many of you have a Twitter account, just to get a sense? Because if you have a Twitter account, it's okay. How many of you have a Facebook account, right? And how many of you are LinkedIn? Because that's another one that's separate. Facebook is being in Facebook doesn't necessarily mean that you're connecting your professional life with out there. So, by the way, so I would actually suggest that for those who are not in academia, and if you're in academia too, that LinkedIn is really a place that I think is safe to be, so to speak. And in the same way, if you're in academia, I think that academia.edu is also another one that it really helps you to connect with the people that have interests similar to yours. Academia.edu is sort of like a Facebook for people who have EDU addresses. But actually, you can join without having an EDU address. So these are the kinds of things that we're talking. When I'm saying social media, social network, I call them social technologies, which is not necessarily how it's known necessarily, but some people talk about them. Basically, technologies that allow us to collaborate and have conversations and discussions, etc. There's a CDC, I'll give you the reference later, just came out with a health communicator, very good resource in terms of social media. And I think that the definitions are helpful. And basically, it's the issue of reach and it's the issue of conversing with others. I mean, that's what the tools allow us to do. And so, highly recommended. This is the Help Communicator Social Media Toolkit, which is a PDF file that you can just go and pick it up. It's well done. I think it is very helpful for those who are in agencies or thinking about developing a social media strategy in your place. It's not about the technology, it's about what are you going to do with it. And these are the kinds of things that this toolkit is packed with, about how certain social media tools, although they change a lot, but more or less by now we sort of like can classify them. I'm not going to show this clip unless we had a lot of time, but it's basically a clip that's called Information Revolution. You can just YouTube it, so to speak, and in about 6 minutes, it basically tells you not so much what are the tools, it tells you what is happening to information and how information is being shaped in a very different way out there. That the internet is basically not just a depository of things, but a process in which you are thinking together. There's an article in the New England Journal of Medicine from last week where Stephen Landers talked about why it's so important to think in terms of HIT, not just in terms of the electronic medical record, but in terms of why is this going to be so prevalent and so important, and basically the issue of aging, chronic illness, which means that there's going to be more management at homes, technological advances. I mean, miniaturization is pretty incredible at this point, and it really is a sort of a logistic regression of miniaturization at this point. And there's a demand for convenience, for privacy, and in a way, I would say that a lot of these social media tools and these new technologies really allow for more privacy. There are things you can do without having anyone know that you are, for instance, in a healthcare situation. Example, and this is important in terms of mental health, for instance. And also the escalating healthcare costs. So I recommend this piece from the New England, and it's free for you to read it. So this is what we did. We did a literary search. The typical one, and then we did sort of an iterative analysis of e-health sites with several of my graduate students, and once in a while, I will just share this information with people who are in the net, who I know via Twitter, who are experts in healthcare social media in one way or the other. They're either researchers or they use it a lot, and basically, I will just share this document that we have created, a huge Excel sheet that we have created with our graduate students, and ask them to go and give us feedback about what we're doing. And so in that iterative process, we triangulate a lot of what we're finding, and we also look at websites, join them, and again, we have an expert review. The other thing we did is we tried to figure out what social media had some background in research, which we thought was important. So this is the criteria for inclusion of those websites and tools. Is it the main goal of healthcare, of course? Is it directed to patients and or e-healthcare providers? Is it recommended or approved by experts? And technically, does it work? I would say that there's tons of social media projects out there that just don't work. They're under construction. They're basically marketing devices, ways of attracting people, but nothing else. So we develop a sort of like a basic criteria for what it would be the collaborative potential, and we thought that very low, from no interaction between creators and users to very high, where a lot of people are participating in the creation of the tool. How are we doing with time, more or less?
You've got about 3 minutes.
3 minutes plus, okay.
4 or 5 minutes.
Okay,
7 minutes.
Cool. So basically, and this is, you know, I could end more or less here because I'll give you examples of these. We categorize them in different ways, and I have examples here. So there's the basic website that you all know, and it's still useful. Actually, this is a website that, if you go in, utilize the more interactive tools. Health 2, there's the famous blog by the director of the hospital in Boston. And then there's the one that allow for information exchange, and here's one example. And basically, the users are able to edit content and able to interact with one another, and this is an example of one of them. Here's another one for information exchange, which is basically for researchers and clinicians. This is a journal that exists in the net. It's called the Journal of Participatory Medicine. Very interesting project. And then there's the clinical networks. Equivalent to a Facebook, so to speak, but for either researchers to share information, for care providers to meet with each other, and here, you know, there's a couple of examples. This is a very interesting one, and it's been used for volunteering in disasters and in other situations, emergency situations. Then there are the e-patient, e-doctors networks, which basically move us beyond just general info or gathering resources, but it moves us in the direction of actually providing services using social media, with a lot of areas in which there's private exchanges and not. This is MedHelp, which is very helpful. Then there's Patients Like Me, which for those, if you're not familiar with it, I highly recommend you to look at. Basically, it's about how patients with similar conditions can interact. And it's not just that if you have diabetes, you connect with people who have diabetes. Maybe you will connect with someone who has diabetes, who is 50 years old, who also has asthma and lives in a situation where there's a lot of allergies. So you can find a group that actually has all those conditions. This is another one. There's plenty of competition around this in these terms. And then the health research networks for research to interact with another one. I'm going quick, but again, I'll send you the. And then there's this one, for instance, a very interesting one. Oh, I have 5 minutes. 5 minutes for discussion or 5 more minutes?
5 more minutes.
Oh, 5 more minutes. Okay, let me go back a little bit to this because I thought I had, okay, great. So there are very sophisticated websites for researchers to interact with each other that really are based on, you know, where people actually collaborate and actually help each other. One of the things that we always talk about, and I've been in many discussions on social media in this conference and in others, and there's a lot of, there's actually a very important conference, a summit on mobile health right now happening at the same time as APHA. You know, a lot of the discussion is about control and the concerns about privacy, but there's very little discussion about what actually happens and how is it that people actually, I would say, behave better in the net than outside. The concern is the other way around, so to speak. And this is demonstrated by these networks. Here's another one, it's called Scientist Solutions. It's much more into towards biomedicine. And there's the Biomed Experts, which is a combination of a large database for people to explore things, but also it allows you to connect via, for instance, you find someone, an article that you like, and see how that researcher is connected with other researchers, map them in a map, see if they're close to you, etc. Then there are the eHealth mobile applications, and this is just exploding these days. There's a lot of business, there's a lot of money at stake, so to speak. And it's interesting here because in terms of, we're trying to figure out if this will fit within the social media or not, in terms of developing, helping us to develop collaboration between patients and doctors, among doctors, et cetera, because many of these are basically an enhancement of something that we've been doing for years. For instance, how to track our behavior. Here's another one. And then there's interactive media, which it's its own world. And there's a lot of being done around how, for instance, around exercise and around obesity. How is it that you can engage? And here, you're not just kids and young people. There's a huge amount of adults who I don't play much in the, I don't have time, but there's tons of people who are actually very immersed in virtual games, and they've been immersed for decades. So why wouldn't you access them via virtual games? And then this experience, and this is gonna more or less end, it's these primary care e-practices. One of the most famous one is Hello Health. And I don't know if I did, if I have a video here or not, but basically it's how people can move their primary care practice into the net. And the most famous one again is Hello Health, which now was bought by a large insurance company. Here's an example, it gives you a sense of what happens in a primary care e-practice, what are the kinds of things that are made possible. So this is the scope of activities, and we've been thinking about how, what is it that actually, I mean, to in a way, the tools that really elicit collaboration are the ones in which, I mean, they're easy to access, they're not related to a particular platform, they're fairly reliable, they don't require tons of learning. I mean, it's very different to learn how to use, for instance, just to give you an example, an application in BlackBerry, you have to have highly literate than it is to learn in an iPhone. Just the easiness, so to speak, makes a huge difference. And we all know that technologies that are easy to adopt are the ones we end adopting. So these are some of the criteria for collaboration. Where is the communication coming only in one direction? Who is participating? Who is the author? Obviously, if it's a large company, if it's Merck, there might be some interest there in terms of why are they engaged with you? Is it for profits? What's the purpose? What is the type of tool? Does it operate in different platforms? So it's not attached just to either Mac or Windows or Linux or whatever. Is it sustainable? Is it scalable? And also, it's culturally competent. All right, so this is, I'm gonna finish here, this is where the future research steps are. One is we're trying to figure out that rather than just searching for what is available, we will actually start interviewing the owners or the people who actually run these sites. And then we will develop a scoring mechanism, a scale, and then measure, try to measure the impact that it has in terms of collaboration. I'll stop here. So we have 5 minutes for questions, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Right. Right.
Trust this one.
Yeah.
Because Wiki, I asked that question of the founder of Wikipedia several years ago, and interestingly enough, he wasn't interested in getting into healthcare-related issues because of the issue of trust.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an excellent question. I mean, it's an open question, okay? But let me give you an example. There are sites that allow you to share your experiences with particular medication, right? So let's say that you're taking Wellbutrin because you have trouble concentrating and you're depressed. So, but then within that particular year, you notice also that you have had eye problems, right? Now, if you read the, I don't know who reads them, but if you read the medication, you know, the contraindications, I don't know how it's called, there will be no real mention of the connection between taking that medicine and eye problems, right? But then if you go to this site, you plug in some of your information, you're saying this is the amount of Wellbutrin that I'm taking, da-da-da-da-da-da, and I'm having eye problems, boom, there are several people and hundreds of people who have those issues. So that was not, you know, it did not happen in the clinical trials, it was not reported for whatever reason. So there, the person who engaged with those sites, so to speak, and you can do it anonymously, you don't have to write your name, etc. You can provide a fictitious name if you want, will basically, the trust will be developed in relationship, not so much in terms of who owns this site, but in terms of who is participating. So the variables of trust are not, they're not necessarily controlled by you as the owner, quote, of the site, but it's connected to the community that is developed around it. And in some way, I think that what you're gonna be talking about in terms of how to think about social media and public health relates to the issue of developing community. So, and that's true for patients, and we are all patients, and also, but it's also true for professionals. You know, there's an interesting Venn diagram to think about the issue of privacy, and you know, this is, so it's called privacy and Facebook. So what is the Venn diagram? It's two circles. That means that there's not an understanding of that, but I think that there's a lot of that happens in terms of how you consult and how you relate to it. Now, obviously, one of the things that is happening, and I assume you do too, let's say you have an asthma attack or your kid has an asthma attack, what do you do first? You Google it in one way or the other, right? So you arrive to your doctor with certain ideas about what is happening. So the doctor should be the one at that point, or the nurse, or even the second, whoever works there, whoever you're connecting with, should be able to help you to put a balance on that data, and that will help us in terms of trust, for instance. Again, I think it's connected to the issue of community more than anything else. Yes?
Got about 1 minute.
What about organizations like Health on
Demand? Excuse me?
Organizations like Health on Demand actually certify?
Yes, sites. Yes. There are, exactly. Actually, I didn't say it, but we also have a column saying which ones are certified. All the sites that we are looking at, a lot of them are either certified in the process certification or as, you know, in a way, the experts somehow are a way of certification for us, I mean, in terms of research purpose. But yes, that is an important thing. Now, here we go into the issue of a lot of this work has been done on the side of innovation. So as you start to sort of like accredit stuff, you know what starts to happen. I mean, the innovation kind of like, you know, the limitations, the entry level. I mean, in terms of this is that my time is done. The power of a lot of these sites is not based on how cute the site is, but the ability to actually engage people in actually creating the site or the tool.
Are there other organizations like
Help on the Met? I do not know.
Okay. We're out of time. If it's a quick question.
Yes. Right, correct. Right, exactly, and that's what I was saying, that in a way, I think that doctors write and say, oh, what is happening there, what you search is not run, is, you know, doctors need to be prepared to, or probably health practitioner, or whoever, needs to be prepared to have that conversation with the patient, or the public health worker, or whoever. I mean, you have to be prepared to have this conversation and to sort of like investigate together and figure out, you know, how we can assess if this is trustworthy or not. I mean, it's sort of like health info literacy, I guess.
Thank you.
Yep.